Vasectomies, they are something that had been offered freely at the Democratic National Convention a month or two ago now. There's something that come up on the street as a potential solution to unplanned pregnancies. Is this actually the answer, or can we do better? That's the topic for today. Stay tuned. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Pro-Life Guys podcast, a show dedicated to equipping you with the tools that you need to have compassionate and compelling conversations about abortion so that together we can change minds, save lives, and transform our culture. My name is Cam. I am the host of the show, and we are tackling a spicy one today. A spicy one that I know is spicy for a number of different reasons. It is spicy because news came out several months ago about how the Democratic National Convention, hosted in Chicago, Illinois, would be offering free vasectomies outside of their convention. I did a little bit of fact checking on that. Apparently, strictly speaking, Planned Parenthood was not affiliated whatsoever with that Democratic National Convention. There was no mention of them being a formal partner, and that it was purely accidental that their little vasectomy clinic was set up a block or two away from the actual convention center. And so conservatives have been fact-checked that the convention itself was not offering the vasectomies, but Planned Parenthood, whom we all know is distantly and abhorrently not connected to the Democratic National Party whatsoever, were offering these in collaboration with Chicago Health or something like that. And it just happened that they were going to be in the near vicinity with their mobile vasectomy and mobile abortion unit. I'm not tackling the politics per se. I will leave that to more politically oriented minds and podcasts. But this is also something that comes up in conversation for us at activism. I was doing some outreach on nearby a senior high school in Calgary here a couple days ago, and had an older woman come by who thought that she was being very, very witty and original by saying, well, when are you scheduled for your vasectomy? Have you already had a vasectomy? That's all she would say to me. And then she kept on walking by. Vasectomies are becoming not only more and more common. I know a number of people who have had vasectomies. I know people on my baseball team who just like come in to the ball game, be like, hey, can I get the first half of this game off because I had a vasectomy the other day? And like, oh, okay, well, let's talk about this in the beer tent afterwards. I know friends. I know people who have been a part of our team in a volunteer capacity. I'm sure that there are people who have been connected to CSPR and other pro-life entities in a staff or intern capacity that know people or have personally had vasectomies as a manner of, to put it plainly, birth control.
I said that I wanted to have kids, and you said that you wanted me to have a vasectomy. What did I do? And then, when you said that you might want to have kids, and I wasn't so sure, who had the vasectomy reversed? And then when you said you definitely didn't want to have kids, who had it reversed back? Snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap. I did. Okay. You have no idea the physical toll the three vasectomies have on a person.
How do we tackle this? How do we tackle this when it comes up in conversation, first and foremost? And how do we tackle it when it comes up, not just in our activism conversations, but in our the rest of our normal lives? Because I'm sure that we all live normal lives outside of our pro-life outreach. I wanted to talk a little bit about the two different kinds of conversations and when to tackle it and when not to tackle it. Then we'll talk a little bit about background, and then we'll talk about how to navigate it if necessary. But I want to make the distinction between the kinds of conversations where it needs to be tackled and the kinds of conversations where it does not need to be tackled, because there are times that it does not need to be tackled. So often there are red herrings that get thrown out in our conversation or drive-by comments, somebody walking by, like the woman who kind of called it out to me as she was walking by, when is your vasectomy scheduled? And it's not actually in our best interest to pursue all of these red herrings, especially when we have such a limited opportunity for engagement. And I would liken a comment like, when is your vasectomy scheduled, to a comment like, how many children have you adopted? Or why aren't you handing out condoms? I think that there are questions that get thrown out that if they're walking away, we have a much better opportunity to leave something in the heart and mind of the person who threw that out if we ask something, whether it's a line like, well, do you believe that all humans have human rights? Or do you think that we can kill innocent humans to solve problems? Or something along those lines that actually gets more to the central question around the abortion debate. I think that that's probably far more worth our while to just basically ignore the comment. And if we draw them into a conversation, then sure, we can tackle any of those three, that there are very valid responses to whether or not vasectomies are the answer, whether or not pro-lifers ought to adopt all of the children that are available or not available, to be received in loving homes, whether or not we should be handing out condoms. I think that they are all questions that could warrant a very in-depth and very heartfelt response. However, when they're thrown out without much weight to them, I think that it serves pro-lifers far more beneficially if we were to focus on the issue at hand. And I would very strongly suggest that question of, can we kill innocent humans to solve even the hardest of problems? Because in that we steep so much of what our argument is built upon. We are acknowledging that there are problems that demand solutions, and we are asking whether or not innocent humans can be killed to solve those problems. And so that's what I would suggest initially. For those conversations where there is actually response demanded, when people are actually earnestly asking this question and proposing it as a valid solution to the abortion crisis, hey, if you don't want there to be abortions, why aren't you advocating for vasectomies? I think that this is just one step beyond the condom or birth control question of, why aren't you offering birth control if you don't want unplanned pregnancies to be ended with abortion? And while when it comes to forms of hormonal or barrier form birth control, I think generally the response would be that these are creating both a contraceptive mindset that surrounds the likelihood of still having children, right? That all forms of barrier and hormonal birth control have a quote unquote risk factor for the likelihood of pregnancy happening. One day I'll do another session on the math behind the faulty logic of hormonal or barrier birth control, and how this is not solving the abortion crisis, because there are still children conceived when parents are using hormonal or barrier birth control, whether they're using it as instructed on the packaging and labeling or whether they're not. Regardless of how particular and precise you are in your methods of hormonal or barrier birth control, there's still a quote-unquote risk or consequence of becoming pregnant. And if you have gone into that behavior assuming and planning on not becoming pregnant, then you are going to be in whether a high degree of crisis or a low degree of crisis when you find out that you are nonetheless pregnant. And so the question remains, can we rely on these forms of birth control if they are leading us to a faulty conclusion that we will certainly avoid pregnancy? I'm not saying that everyone who becomes pregnant while relying on birth control is guaranteed to abort their child. However, there is a much higher likelihood that that is going to happen. And tragically, even if it doesn't happen, there's a lot more very, very negative connotations that can go in. I mean, sitcoms all the time and other conversations that I've heard, like literally firsthand, kids knowing that they were a quote unquote mistake, that they were not a planned child, that their parents didn't actually want them, that creates a really difficult relational dynamic between parent and child, even if the child doesn't know. Right? Like, I've never understood why a parent would tell their child that they weren't planning on having them, that they were a mistake. What kind of mayhem and chaos is that going to create for your child? On a way higher service level, would you ever tell one of your employees, like, hey, yeah, we really didn't want to hire you, but like, we didn't have any better options. And so, I wish that you didn't need to be here, but you are here. Welcome to the culture. I hope that you have a great time. Like, we would never say that in a workplace about a hiring. Why would we ever say that to a child? Why would we ever joke about that? Sure, the kid might, on a surface level, at times joke about it and seem to roll with that. But that is insane to think about the mayhem that that's going to create in their emotional, social, psychological well-being. And even if they never know, even if that's something between you and your spouse, like that is going to put strains and you are going to have to work really hard to overcome that subconscious, intuitive, whatever of we weren't planning on, we didn't really want this child, but now we're going to choose to want and love this child. Love's a choice so much of the time. Anyways, I'm not saying that it can't be done. I'm just saying that it adds in a difficult element of relational dynamic when you're going in with that explicit of a avoiding desire. I'm sure that I am not talking about this in the absolute tact that I could. I apologize. And yet I understand that this is a dilemma that many people are faced with. And I empathize with that. And I think that it is difficult to navigate these kinds of conversations. And vasectomies go one step further, right? That vasectomies in the tying of the male tubes and preventing sperm from being present and not to get into too much of your biology. That's probably not why you're tuning in here and making everyone feel uncomfortable, but you're not becoming pregnant after the husband, the boyfriend, the whomever has a vasectomy. And so you are certainly avoiding pregnancy with, I'm sure that there are cases in which a vasectomy was not completely done or somehow you're still getting sperm through there, but this must have the highest degree of effectiveness beyond obviously abstinence. However, this is something that goes well beyond the simple connotations that they go in here. And there are reasons why people want to go the vasectomy route and not just the absolute certainty that they can engage in sexual activity without the quote unquote risk of pregnancy or the consequence of pregnancy or however they are considering the gift of life. But also I read a report of the number of mothers and women out there that are saying that they don't want to rely on hormonal birth control because guess what? The jury is out that hormonal birth control plays havoc with women's entire body because of the hormonal effect that it has for trickle down and all that kind of thing. There's highly documented cases about the profound and negative health impacts of hormonal birth control on women, on men. There are massive implications. Dare I say, there are also massive health implications that come into the vasectomy question as well. However, this is one of the other reasons. It's not just an absolute certainty that a child will not be conceived during sexual activity, but also even those who are confident in their ability to avoid pregnancy using hormonal birth control, they don't want to rely on hormonal birth control because of the negative health consequences that might come from it. And so that's, again, the background to the question of why would you even want to pursue a vasectomy? Why would you want even a minorly invasive surgery in the first place? First, obviously, and foremost, is to avoid pregnancy with a very high, if not absolute, certainty that pregnancy will be avoided. And second of all, that even those who are confident in their ability to, quote unquote, avoid pregnancy risks using hormonal birth control, they recognize the negative health consequences of hormonal birth control and want to avoid those. And so that's where we're coming from. It's deemed to be a somewhat more natural. And yet, how desperate of a solution is it to not be willing to modify behavior whatsoever and simply look at a solution like this? And this is putting aside, I mean, I'm sure that there are questions and debates that could be had around whether forced sterilization should happen to those who commit sexual violations and sexual assault and that kind of thing. I'm, again, not going to weigh in on that. That's a different moral and legal question as to whether you can forcibly sterilize convicted criminals. Spoiler alert, I don't think that we should. I don't think that's the solution. I think that this is a band-aid solution that is not getting to the root. And it always makes me think of one of the more horrifying pieces from The Hunger Games. Throwback to The Hunger Games for all of you young adult readers and whatnot. I read The Hunger Games. I think that they're relatively well done. Suzanne Collins, my man Attila, Attila, I don't know if you listened to this. Attila did his master's thesis on the Hunger Games and stadium fiction, I think that he called it. I never thought that deeply about stadium fiction and the Hunger Games until Attila pursued this as his master's thesis. I can't help but think about the party scenes when Katniss Everdeen, the heroine of the story, and Peeta are invited as winners of the Hunger Games in the first book or whatever. I think it's in the second book that they go to these parties in the Capitol and they see people just gorging themselves over and over and over again on food that's so delicious and so wonderful. And Katniss is so stuffed full from eating all this lovely food and blah, blah, blah. And she asks, or there's the passing comment from one of the other party attendees about, why aren't you eating more? And Katniss says, oh, well, I'm stuffed. And the person asks, well, why don't you just drink some of that blue liquid? You'll barf your guts out and then you can go back to eating. And how horrified naturally Katniss and Peeta and everyone else was about how absurd and how outrageous it was that the Capitol were not only practicing this disgusting and awful form of intentional and conscious bulimia, basically, which I understand is a very real eating disorder that is not simple and is not easy for many people. I'm not trying to ease that. But I think that anyone, especially those who suffer from that eating condition, would be frustrated with people who are doing it electively, without any baggage or difficulty around it. And Katniss is horrified by this. There are people starving in the other parts of the world, and yet these people are not exercising any degree of discipline. They're not exercising any degree of discipline when it comes to their natural desire to eat. I think it's natural and good to eat food and be satisfied not only with food in and of itself, but also to relish good tasting food. I enjoy eating good tasting food. I'm sure that you enjoy eating good tasting food. This isn't a matter of don't ever eat tasty food, don't season your food, don't eat tasty food, but rather how do we deal with that. And I think that that's such a profound analogy for what we're looking at when it comes to vasectomy, looking at the natural desire for sexual activity. I believe that this is a natural and naturally good desire for sexual activity, that we are cutting off from its natural fruition, from its Aristotelian end of uniting with the other person, certainly in one form, but first and foremost in the creation of this wonderful gift of life, children that are bestowed upon us, and wanting to cut off that outcome just as much as cutting off the outcome of nutrition and caloric intake when it comes to diet, to just remove all of the responsibility and all of the natural and good outcomes and just be cafeteria naturalists when it comes to which outcomes we desire and which outcomes we don't desire. I think as well beyond the Hunger Games analogy, you think about all the people that adopted animals during COVID because they were lonely and they wanted companionship, natural good, natural end. And then send them right back to the Humane Society after COVID was done because, you know, this puppy served its function. Or even worse, those that adopt puppies because puppies are cute and young baby animals and even, dare I say, young baby children are cute and beautiful and wonderful. And then when they start talking back to you and arguing with you and coloring on the walls, we don't enjoy their presence quite as much. We'd be horrified if adoption agencies were adopting out children only for a year or two, because the first year or two of the child's life was all that the adopting parents desired, you know, or basically renting a baby for a couple of years or for whatever duration we want to have this child for, and then they're straight back into the quote-unquote system because they'd served our natural desire of nurturing and parenting, but not the complete or full end of that desire, which is parenting through all of its ups and downs, all of its natural goings on, as it were. And I think of lots of these natural desires that are cut off from their full end and how that plagues our society and how our society has gotten so far away from discipline, from modifying our activity, our behavior, our choices with a full understanding of the natural outcomes of those choices and desires. We have been emboldened and empowered and enabled in being so selective in the outcomes that we are willing to accept and those that we are empowered to reject. Obviously, the sexual revolution has been massive in this. And so how do we talk about this in conversation with all of that background? Believe it or not, we're still going to start with common ground. We're not going to start with refuting. We're not going to resolve it by, dare I say, open this big can of worms. We're not going to talk about natural family planning as Catholic or Christian birth control. Oh, guess what? You can still have sex with this person, avoid childbearing so long as you are able to do this. I'm sure that we can have long talks about natural family planning and if and when it is appropriate. But I think that many of us can and should, I would suggest, agree that this should not be marketed as Catholic birth control. Oh, by all means, have all the sex you want. And as long as you follow these rules, then you don't have to worry about any consequences. And so you too can avoid the consequence of sex so long as you follow our more natural prescription for how to avoid pregnancy. I think there are massive problems from looking at even abstinence in that light and temporary abstinence through natural family planning. We're not going to resolve it through that light. We're not going to refute it through a barn burning, Bible thumping kind of look at how depraved our generation is, depraved though it may be. We're going to start with common ground. You know, I agree with you that there are a number of people who are trying to find ways of appropriately avoiding pregnancy. And I think that that is half a step towards the solution, right? Because I think that we could agree that though I don't think that it is an appropriate solution, though I don't want them to solve the problem of killing preborn children by abortion, if you put a gun to my head and force me to choose between abortion and vasectomy, I would have a hard time not choosing vasectomy. I think that that's a false dichotomy. I don't think that that is the real choice between these two. However, I really think that this is out of a good desire to not want to kill children through abortion. I do think that the conscience of the nation, the conscience of the individuals who are choosing vasectomies are doing so because they recognize, whether at a conscious level or at a subconscious level, that abortion is wrong and that abortion cannot be your backup plan, and unplanned pregnancies still come through hormonal and barrier birth control. And therefore, if abortion is not an appropriate solution to that, then you need to have a more confident, more complete way of avoiding pregnancy. I appreciate that. I appreciate, even though it's a surface level solution, I appreciate the fact that they are at least thinking about the life of the preborn child, whether consciously or even just subconsciously. With that, so I agree with you that there are those who are seeking to avoid pregnancy because they recognize the injustice that abortion may be. I'm going to steep that in there and see if I catch bait on that. Because if they say, well, no, they're not doing it because abortion is wrong, okay, now we can talk more directly about abortion. But if I can imply that, yeah, they're doing this because they think that abortion is wrong, then that's a step. It is really difficult to trot out a toddler in this scenario. I am a huge proponent of trying to trot out the toddler whenever humanly possible, because that has the greatest degree of similarities. And so you could attempt a trotting out the toddler analogy along the lines of, imagine there are people who are adopting newborn children because they're so enamored by the newborn phase of childhood and they just want to provide care for these children. But they keep abandoning the children when they're 2 years old. Would you ever say then that nobody should ever be allowed to adopt a child because they might abandon them? Therefore, we are either, dare I say, going to kill the children who would otherwise be adopted because we don't want people abandoning them, abandoning them later on, or else we are never going to allow anybody to adopt them. They are going to be in state care run orphanages forever because we don't want them to ever experience the abandonment of an adoptive parent who might neglect the system or who might make an awful decision later on. The fact that an adopting parent might kill their born child, first of all, doesn't mean that we should kill newborn children because their biological parents are either not able, not willing to care for them. That's not the solution. That can get convoluted. And so I would wonder about an analogy that goes towards that other natural desire of eating. That there are scenarios in which a gastric or intestinal bypass is absolutely medically necessary. I'm not going to debate that. If that's where you're at, or somebody you know has had an intestinal bypass, a procedure that is going to bypass a portion of their intestine. So the food that they eat is missing a part of their small intestine or large intestine for that matter, therefore eliminating the amount of nutrients, the amount of calories often that are absorbed through our diet. This is a very radical form of weight loss and diet management. And this can at times be the only or most appropriate solution for those who are having a very difficult time with caloric intake. However, if this became very prominent, if we had teenagers saying, you know what, I just love eating fried food so much and I'm not willing to temper my diet, my intake, my behavior, my choices, therefore at 14, 15, 16, 25, 30, whatever age, I am going to adopt an intestinal bypass, something that cannot be reversed. I'm not going to get into the Michael Scott snip, snap, snip, snap for anyone who's an office watcher. However, this is a major life decision. And to say that, you know what, I just enjoy eating so much and it's a natural desire and therefore it's a good desire with no limitations, with no discipline. Therefore, I'm going to go with a bypass of part of my intestine so that I can eat more without the risk or consequence of gaining weight or absorbing too many nutrients or calories. That would never be suggested as the appropriate response, generally speaking, to that scenario. Right? This isn't necessarily dealing with the highly volatile and medically necessary scenarios, but generally speaking, the solution to that natural desire not being tempered is not, okay, well, don't discipline your eating habits. We're going to make it so that you can pursue your eating habits without any modifications whatsoever. Would that be an appropriate solution? If instead of encouraging youth, young adults, members of our society at any stage to consider having a balanced diet and to exercise frequently, no, we are just going to hand out free gastric bypasses so that we don't have to worry about trying to get kids or adults to exercise or trying to get them to eat a healthy diet. Just let them eat whatever diet they want and we'll do all of these gastric bypasses. And just like you get your shots in grade 10, we'll give you gastric bypass in grade 10. We're really good at it. The risk of infection is really low. We'll just give it to everybody and we won't have to deal with childhood or adult obesity ever again. That is a bonkers solution. We're not actually going to suggest that. And if we're not going to address a lack of discipline to a natural desire when it comes to eating in that way, why would we take that approach when it comes to sexual desire? Why would we take the approach that there's a natural desire for sexual activity? However, because such a large portion of our society is unwilling to moderate or discipline their behavior, that we're just going to en masse offer free vasectomies so that you can pursue that without discipline, without moderating your activity. Why wouldn't we take the same approach that we would for any other unreasonable lack of discipline? That's what I think can be an effective solution. Like I said, you can absolutely trot out the toddler. It might be a little less realistic. It might be a little less relatable, to a lot of people. However, many of us can appreciate the experience, whether we struggle with over intake or not. We've all been there. We've all wanted to eat more. We've all had the natural desire of like, this is just so good. I'm enjoying the flavors of grandma's cooking so much. I wish there's a way that I could eat more, but Thanksgiving dinner has filled me to the extent that I just can't handle a piece of all of these pies. The solution to that is better discipline, not a radical and wild physiological intervention that's going to allow you to consume as much of everything and anything that you want without any thought towards modifying and moderating our behavior. Okay, and so I think that this is a reasonable way of getting people to think rationally about discipline and moderation of behavior, that we don't need to Bible thump necessarily at this point. Bible thumping would be very good, though. Eventually, once we've built that common ground, once we've built that rapport and understanding with that person, then they're likely to be far more receptive to a deeper conversation about the virtue and value of discipline. However, initially, people are going to be very, very hesitant, to put it lightly, to pursue that route. And so I hope that makes sense. Let me know your questions and comments. Shoot me an email@prolifeguys.com. Hit me up there. And yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. May God bless you abundantly, wherever you're at, however many hours are left in your day.